Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Unnamed MMA Podcast with Jordan Sherwood and myself, Mario Heron. Follow Jordan on Twitter at WoodOnESPN1000. Jordan, we have, I think, the best card since International Fight Week announced, and that's UFC 331. Hunter Campbell, you didn't blow it this time. How excited are you?
Yeah, it's all coming together like rather quickly over the last 24, 48 hours. You know, we didn't have a chance to record last week, so it's kind of funny how all this news breaks after we take off a week. So maybe we take off a couple of weeks, and then we're going to get some major fights finally booked. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think the headliner certainly is the unfortunate circumstances that kind of led to this booking. So if you're out of the know, unfortunately, Alan Nascimento, UFC flyweight, 4-2 record in the UFC, just 34 years of age, was found dead in his home in Brazil. Apparent heart attack while he slept. So he loses his life way, way, way too young. Training partner, friend of Charles Oliveira. Oliveira had been rumored to be fighting Armin Sarukian at the top of this headliner. Charles Oliveira opts not to fight. Totally, you know, in the right there, you know, sympathize with him as he mourns the loss of his friend and his training partner. But as you were giving the flowers, you know, to, you know, Hunter Campbell, Sean Shelby, the matchmaking crew at the UFC quickly scrambles and puts together Mauricio Rufi versus Armin Sarukian at the top of the bill. So now you've got a 5-round essentially title eliminator with two guys you probably weren't matching up with against each other at the top of the lightweight division. And outside a little bit of a hiccup that Rufi suffered against Benoit Saint-Denis a couple of fights ago, the guy has looked amazing, you know, in the octagon. And like, you know, Mario, I think this guy could be, if he wins against Armin Sarukian, we're talking about Anderson Silva 3.0. Because I think Izzy, Israel Adesanya, was Anderson Silva 2.0. This could be the third version of a guy that elusive, that dominating, of a striker that you just can't do anything else against him. And, you know, we'll wait and see what happens against Armin. But, you know, I lead with that because that's at the top of the bill. And then, of course, we get the rematch between Joshua Van and Alexander Pantoja. For the flyweight title. So great job. Yeah. I mean, that's the lead, at least for me, with UFC 331 next month, right? Next month in California.
Yeah. It will take place September 19th, 2026. Like you said, Crypto Arena is where this event will happen. And on the Rufi front, you mentioned it, has a slight hiccup against BSD. He starts training with a different camp, and he looks like just a completely different fighter, just looks more intelligent out there. White House makes a statement where he just absolutely dominates Michael Chandler. It looks like a guy that has never fought before stepping in the ring against him. And he gets an out Armand, who in the kind of same boat, they both need this for that title shot. For Rufi, it's just, again, that line, if you will, where Armand's like, I need one more to get ahead of everyone and take on that belt. And to me, you said it best. This probably wasn't a fight that was ever like going to happen or like was ever really in the works. But now that it is, I think it's a perfect matchup for both guys. Rufi can prove that he can stuff a guy that goes for the takedowns and then possibly knock him out. Armand can handle a really, really lengthy, talented striker and kind of make it his fight and take him down, and also taking out one of the top prospects that's up and rising in the division. So massive, just who's going to prove it type of fight for both of these guys. And this might be crazy to say, I'm kind of more excited for this than him versus Oliveira. Like, I really am.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have the one argument on the Oliveira side is like, that fight was so close.
So close.
And Oliveira, 10 more seconds in that second round, he probably submits Armin Sarukian. But you're right. We've seen it before. And as much as I love Charles Oliveira, like, you know, he is essentially a part of that old guard at lightweight. I mean, he still should be fighting for titles, and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But, you know, to what your point was, you get Armin, you know, fighting a guy that really is the boogeyman maybe of the lightweight division that no one else wants to fight. And I like it too, that Armin has to fight someone to get that title shot. I don't, you know, I would have been okay if you told me, all right, he's going to fight Gaethje for the lightweight title. Like, fine. Like, he is the rightful contender, but he hasn't fought since November of last year. It was against Dan Hooker. You know, I really wanted to see one more time him fight. So that's why I was comfortable with the Oliveira. But now with you have Rufy in there, that's a great fight. And you're right. Then we get to see, is Rufy really for real? Can he handle the all-encompassing game of a guy like Sarukian? Is the new camp really paying off for him? And it's happening like quickly, you know. We're about a month away from that happening. So, it's really exciting to have that fight, booked, and scheduled for UFC 331.
It's awesome. And it's going to be really interested too, to see if, you know, either wins, how quickly that turnaround will be for either of them, right? Like Rufy, that's not two fights this year. How quickly can you get back in there and possibly fight for the belt, maybe fight Patty, Ilya, whoever it may be? On Armand's side, it's like, how badly do you want it to get back into the octagon and possibly take on the champ and Justin Gaethje? What's your kind of time frame with that? Because again, we've seen these long pauses, whether that's on him, by the way, or just on the UFC. We've seen these long pauses in between fights. Then obviously we have the famous pullout he had against Islam, which kind of put him in bad graces with the UFC ever since, because it was the night before. The other part of this card, Joshua Van versus Alexandra Pantoja. You mentioned it's like the rematch, but is it really a rematch? It's probably just the fight that just needs to happen, really. I know in the first time, I was really, really all in on Pantoja. Just going to wipe the floor with him, take him down. Obviously, he gets hurt. But with the way Joshua Van looked last fight and the way he was able to survive the ground, obviously, it's a different animal when you face Pantoja. But I can't lie to you when I say, Jordan, I have a lot more confidence in Van going into this fight than I did in the first one. And it's, you know, I know he's started out as plus money, I believe, right now. I'm looking at plus 100 on DraftKings. I'm very, very eager to jump on the plus. I'm very, very eager.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a completely different fighter from when they first fought. And he proved me very wrong. And I think a lot of people very wrong in his performance against Tatsuro Taira. You know, I think a lot of people thought Tatsuro Taira was going to just run right through him. And he kind of almost did. Taira certainly had his moments, but Van just proved, like, his boxing is at an elite level. His ground game is ever improving. And now he's going to have like a second full camp preparing for Pantoja. And what is Pantoja like post injury? We've seen it time and time again in this sport. You know, guys come back from whatever significant injury. We were just talking about with, you know, with Conor McGregor. Like, it's just, some guys are just not the same. And Pantoja is getting up there a little bit in age. You know, he has been in a lot of wars. And, you know, the one thing we talk about Pantoja is he's almost, I hate to keep using now the second time, the boogeyman, but he's the boogeyman from the standpoint of, like, he just like walks through everything. You know, he's like Michael Myers, you know, he's just Jason Voorhees. He like takes a lot of damage and like he doesn't get stopped. And like, you know, I'm not saying that Joshua Van has that one stop shot power, but he has some elite boxing. And like, you know, Pantoja getting beat up to like get those takedowns and get the back of Joshua Van will be a tall task. So I don't hate you looking and firing off on that plus money for Van right now. You know me, I like to actually kind of wait almost till fight night to actually fire off on most of my plays when I get a chance to do the research. But you're right, the initial first look on this second run back, Pantoja should have been the clear favorite. He was my pick the first time that they fought. Unfortunate injury happens. I now, yes, agree with you that Van should be looked at a lot closer and has a very good chance to win this fight.
I think you mentioned like the biggest worry in it is just Pantoja, is this too quick of a turnaround for him? You know, how healed is he really? Coming back from an injury, you are 36 years old. Your body's not about bouncing back like it was at 26. We've seen guys really have a mental block when they get into the octagon, when they've came off such significant injury. But to that, if he wins this and he beats Joshua Van, the thing that I've kind of like keep thinking about over and over again is what's next for him at the flyweight? Like, does he move up to bantamweight? He's not that big of a guy. I think it obviously be a tough go with the monsters that are in bantamweight division. But that was something I was like thinking about late last night is it, could this be like the last fight we see from him almost? Like if he beats Van, like who else is there? Or does he do a trilogy fight with him?
Maybe you argue that's a trilogy fight, depends on the result of it. You know, maybe he kind of like waits, because I said to you in a previous show, I believe the UFC flyweight champion, as we turn the page of 2027, is going to be Manel Kopp.
Yes, your so, guy.
Yeah, Starboy, right?
Starboy.
So, and Pantoja has a victory over Manel Kopp. So, you know, perhaps if Pantoja puts up a good fight, it's a five-round war, Van gets the win, he gets a decision, maybe Van fights Manel Kopp, you know, in December, and Pantoja kind of like waits, and because, you know, he was such a dominating champion and beat everybody else in the flyweight division, he waits, and then he's the first, you know, he gets one more crack at it. That could be, you know, something that you argue. I would have argued for Lenair Kavanaugh, but, you know, Brandon Royval is a fucking dog, so like he put an end to that really quickly too. So that would be the only thing, but you could be right too. Yeah, Pantoja could just say I'm done, and he's not a big guy going up the bantamweight to chase a different belt. I don't know if I necessarily see that happening.
Other fighters on this card, obviously, is who I call the Wemby of the UFC. Gable Stevenson takes on Sean Sharif, and guess what, Jordan? The guy he's fighting has yet to win in the UFC. So kind of more slow play on his development. He's been KO'd in both of his fights that he's had in the UFC. He last fought December 13th. Excited that Gable's fighting. Almost think, though, that we could speed up the process a little bit. You have Tai Tuivasa, who's on this card. I don't know why you just don't throw him and just go, it's a big name, it's gonna gain more popularity. Like, I don't know why that's just not the option.
Maybe Tai Tuivasa, after he loses to Robles on this fight card, he's next for Gable. I guess we're currently living in a world where Gable Stevenson thankfully is going to fight consistently, but he's going to really be slow played in this heavyweight division and not be thrown, you know, immediately through to the Wolves. And it's kind of funny because, you know, maybe back in the day, and I'm just thinking about this because he just announced his full-on retirement from all combat sports, pro wrestling, what have you, Brock Lesnar. But Brock Lesnar had one fight in MMA, and then he was thrown right to the Wolves and fought Frank Mir in his second fight ever, in MMA, first fight in the UFC. And granted, like, I think probably at the time, UFC was just saying, hey, cash cow, they have no idea how long this guy is for a career in MMA. Or he clearly was, or at least a pretty good long run. You know, with Gable, probably doesn't come with that much popularity, that much fanfare. So they know he's in it for the long haul. But I think, you know, again, he gets a win, and then maybe he fights a guy like Marcin Tybura, who just fought and lost, but he's a consensus, like, always perennial top 15 heavyweight. Or, you know, maybe he gets someone else, but it's just good to see Gable fighting again. And, you know, hopefully he gets, after this fight, you know, another one, or maybe another two, you know, in this calendar year. So he has a busy schedule.
Other important fights, or just big ones on the card, you have Money Moicano versus Brian Ortega fighting each other again. I mentioned you have Bam Bam, who's making his return, probably going to lose for the 1,000th time in his career. Yeah. The other shocking thing that came out while I was looking at this was that Chito Vera is still ranked in the top 10 in the bantamweight division, which I was like shocked by. I was like, how? Guy's losing to everyone.
Well, it's meta, right? So the algorithm probably is not loading, you know, like 3 or 4 years.
Hasn't updated.
Right. That's a fun fight, you know, against Charles Jourdain. Like, you know, that should be, at least on paper, it is. You know, we'll see if they can deliver. You know, I'm seeing also Menafield is on this card against, you know, the Polish guy that's undefeated, you know, 9-0 in the UFC with 3 knockouts in the first round. So We'll see if, you know, that guy's consistent streak. And you mentioned it too. Like, if Brian Ortega is right and Brian Ortega has a great weight cut, like, that fight against Money Moicano will be awesome. Like,
Moicano's
great. Money Moicano's great. And I, like, he's the guy that I put all my money on just in the hopes that he wins and then he has a great, and then they just hand him the microphone and he just goes off, because I love that. I love the shit that he does and stuff like that. He's got no filter. And he's just great in that regard. He doesn't even give a fuck. And no, by the way, too, I mean, look, it was early in the morning. You were probably busy with Chauncey at the studios, but like the fact that after whatever he said in Serbian, if that's correct, I don't even know what language he was speaking, but then Erosmedix goes, this whole division is cooked. Like, I just thought that was great. Like, he's 100% wrong. Like, he's not going to cook anybody once he gets up to the top of the division. But just the fact after a 20-second knockout, he's like, this whole division is cooked. And, like, the whole crowd just goes nuts. That was awesome.
Oh, it's the best ever. When anytime the UFC fighters kind of really lean into, I'm going to call it like the WWE attitude, or just making a bold statement, it's the funniest and best thing of all time.
Yeah,
it's unbeatable. Other fights that we still need booked though in 2026.
Yeah.
I mean, what do we think?
Yeah, there's I wrote down a bunch of them. Like, because we consistently talk about this, that it's an issue for the UFC. Like, they're not booking fights. Even though they have a fight card like every other week. So like where do you go? Like, you know, the first two, because we've talked about them continuously on the show, they're trilogy fights. Merab Dvalishvili and Peter Yan, bantamweight title, like, they have to fight. They're 1-1 against each other. I think Merab more so because of a busy schedule loses that fight against Peter Yan. So you got to book that fight. And then Dricus versus Strickland, you know, at the middleweight. Dricus has two victories over the current middleweight champion, and they both don't have a fight booked. DDP got a win over a former champion in Usman his last time out. Like, book that fight already. You know, the whole Hamza Chimaev Strickland garbage is just that, in my opinion. It's garbage. So those are two fights that you need to immediately book, trilogy fights that I want to see.
I'm in the same boat. Jan versus Merab's the one that I just probably have circled the biggest, just because I'm so curious to see how a fresh Merab's going to look against him. You know, that's eating kind of his humble meal. And is going to be able to kind of bounce back, because, you know, like we both said 1,000 times, I think he was just tired going into that fight. I think he was just beaten down from all the wars he was in beforehand. This fight that I have that I think that still need to be booked, it's a mega fight. It is not a lot of news. Like, it had a lot of heat behind it, and then it sort of like cooled off. We haven't heard a lot about it. Is Amanda Nunes versus Kyla Harrison. And we just have heard, it's been like stalled on all fronts. And there's so many storylines that go into it. Why Amanda left American Top Team, because she knew that one day she'd have to fight Harrison and knew that she was on the rise. There was going to be on the White House card. Harrison hurts her neck. Obviously, it doesn't happen. Just really kind of confused where we stand with that. And in the year where I think we haven't gotten a lot of women's fights that have been promoted or one like even happened, this is the one that's probably the biggest in the history of the sport. And the fact that we don't have it yet is a little concerning. And maybe it's not Harrison's not healthy yet, or whatever it may be, but this needs some type of update and this needs some type of promotion, because again, there's so much storylines and is the biggest mega fight in women's MMA history.
Yeah. It's the fight I wrote down immediately below Marat, the two trilogy fights I just talked about. And it is so important for women's MMA and so important to like move the division on, because I couldn't even tell you like who the number one contender is for the fight if Amanda Nunes is not fighting for the championship. Like, I have no idea. Yeah. You know, it's a sad state of affairs when, you know, we're in a position with women's mixed martial arts. It's almost like this fight is now trending towards like what Rousey and Carano became, you know, like it was a significant fight per se, but really not. Like, those women hadn't fought in years, and like, we're just not getting consistency. Obviously, Nunez retired, so he's coming out of retirement for this fight. Kayla Harrison, you know, fought pretty regularly right away when she was, you know, added to the UFC roster. But now since she became champion, she has not. So yeah, that's unfortunate. It needs to be booked. It needs to be, you know, because there is, right, there's a lot of storyline. There's bad blood, but you got to announce it, and then you got to kind of like remind all the fans like what this bad blood, you know, is. So you know, it's certainly one that I would want to see. One that I now want to see that I think is developing some bad blood. It kind of slow rolls a little bit with a guy that we pegged for heavyweight stardom. I really want to see Josh Holkin and Walter Walker. I really want to see this fight now. It probably doesn't make sense. I mean, Walter Walker, like what a fucking run this guy is on right now. And he's just submitting everybody and just doesn't give a fuck. And like, you know, Josh Holkin probably should be in a number one contender fight, just based on, again, beating guys where they are in the division and stuff like that, you know, like, but I kind of want to see it. I kind of want to see just with the shit talking going back and forth, and just the lead up to it would be very good. And I'm sure Holkin would probably win that fight. Just, you know, he would have enough wherewithal and skill set to avoid a takedown. But it would be fun. I think it'd be fun.
To your point though, it'd be a great test for Holkin, because, you know, the worry was he couldn't get that arm bar. And it was like, how can you not get that? That was like one-on-one stuff. Yeah. So how good is his ground game? And can he kind of survive it against a guy that's that good? So it'd be a good test for him. I did have Holkin in mind, but I had him for Volkov. Mm-hmm. I thought that would be just a fun one. It's like, can you take out the guy that's quote-unquote standing between you and the winner of Cyril Gane and Aspinall? Can you do that? Can you make that happen? Volkov's going to be height-wise, going to tower over him. So how can he handle that length? I think that'd be a perfect test for Josh Holkin. I think any fight, I just want to see him go and see if.
What about any Russian? Because Sergey Pavlovich should fight him too.
Like, true, and yeah. It's the Cold War.
Yeah. Holkin probably would. Like, if Holkin got that fight booked, he would reenact like the training in Rocky IV. You know, just like going through Siberia and like running in the snow and like helping like these horse-drawn carriages out of the snow and stuff like that. Like,
you would have like a Ronald Reagan look-alike walk out with them.
Yeah, totally. What about you? You got anything else? Any of the other fights? I got a couple more.
I think the obvious one we talked about, Ilya versus Paddy. I mean, that's it's never been a more perfect moment for that to happen. And then the other one too. Cyril Gane versus Tom Aspinall. I mean, I think obviously that's probably the one of the cream of the crops, the ones we got to see, especially in a division that, like you talked about, needs a lot of blood and it needs something flowing there. What about you?
Yeah. I had those two other ones, Paddy, Ilya, Gane, Aspinall. Just real quick on heavyweight, one more, Alex Pereira versus anybody.
Yeah.
Just anybody. He just needs a fight. He doesn't deserve the fight for a championship. He's not going to go back down and wait. So, anybody at heavyweight would be certainly fine with me. And going down to his previous division, the other one I had. So like, we need a one night, two fights. We need Ankalaev versus Roundtree, rebook that fight, and you need Yuri versus Costa, and especially Yuri versus Costa, because like they've now been kind of going back and forth a little bit over social media. So really, really book that fight. And coincidentally, I had a friend. He lives in South Florida. He was in a car, an Uber, with a former UFC fighter who trains with Paulo Costa. And he was saying that to them and me that, cause I was on the phone and I basically was interviewing him on speaker, the guy's name was Hugo Wolverine. You could look him up. He was on the Ultimate Fighter in Brazil, season three, whatever. So former UFC fighter. But he was saying that Paulo is waiting for like the Yuri fight. Like that's the one that he's waiting to schedule. No more middleweight, you know, shenanigans, light heavyweight, and likely Yuri next for Paulo Costa.
I freaking love it. And I love the more videos on social media of like Yuri doing sparring and like hands are up. Like he's learning. It's like, well, you know, I've seen this before. Still hands weren't up. But no, I think I'm the same boat. And Paulo Costa versus Yuri is a just good entertainment fight, bad blood building, perfect for it. I'm getting bad blood built up for the fights that are about to happen, UFC 330. And I'm not proud to say this, but I'm like starting to turn on my guy, Ian Garry, a little bit. And I'm not happy about it, Jordan. Mm-hmm. But if I see one more plant protein thing from him, I'm going to have a freak out. I'm fucking tired of it. It's like, I get it, dude. You like beans, you know? Let's get off the rock. Christ. But other than that, any early bets you kind of like for anything you kind of
mean, you know, I don't have words that you are losing your love for your favorite fighter because of his diet.
It's just creeping me out. It's weird. Like, just, it's a weird hill to die on. I don't trust
You're very good. You're very good at like finding those nuances to like handicap a fight a certain way or bet against a fighter a certain way. I respect that about you, but this is your guy.
I know.
Is your guy. Like, if we like remove the, you know, the, or actually you, I have the screen here. You don't, that's just a plain wall. So like, like
in prison,
like if you were home or you're in your studio, like, there's a giant Ian Garry poster. Like, you know, like you love this guy. You just like, you'd stare at him every night. You know, you're like, it's like Shawshank when he was staring at the Marilyn Monroe poster. You know, like you just stared at it for hours.
I still love him. I still have really good faith that he can beat Islam Makhachev. I still think that his striking is going to be an issue. I still think that he can survive any takedown attempt. I still think his length, his size is going to be a problem. I'm just saying, the plant protein, let's shut up about it a little bit, because if you lose, that is your first joke coming. You always got to think about what's coming your way. It's just like those jokes are just going to make themselves, and it's going to be very hard for me not to jump on. It's going to be very, very hard. I'll be like looking at it in the mirror saying, don't do it, don't do it. And then it's going to be like, okay, I got to do one.
Okay.
And then it's just going to happen.
You're going to turn around. We're going to be recording this show next week, and you're going to be all in on Ian Garry. You're going to be like, you're going to be eating it live, like while you do it. Yeah, I mean, I think this fight card is putting together solidly. You know, it's not like UFC 331, but like, you know, you do have some good fights. I've been very much leaning in, and it's a little bit of bias, but Julian Robertson plus money. I think that the speed might be a little bit for much for her on the feet against Mackenzie Dern, but I'm quite confident in her abilities if this fight goes to the ground. So against Mackenzie, I just think that she, you know, time and time again, we've seen Julian Robertson dominate people. She's got a tremendous top game. Obviously, she has a tremendous coach, a black belt in Dean Thomas, that's been with her forever, and she's ever been improving time and time again with her striking. So if you're telling me that like to win a fight, Mackenzie Dern has to win a 5-round stand-up fight, I don't love that against anybody, really. So that's an early look for me on that. You know, I don't know how you cannot believe that Mansur Abdul-Malik is going to wipe out Dustin Stahlfist in the first round. You know, just kind of like what he does against guys like Dustin Stahlfist that will stand in there and take some shots. And then, you know, I don't like to see fighters pull out of fights, but good on the UFC for getting Joel Alvarez to step in and fight Chidi and Jacolani. On the undercard, that fight will be fucking bonkers for as long as it lasts. So that fight's really exciting. And okay, so, and the other thing too that like has me excited, but not really, is like the fact that we learned that Michael Morales is the backup fighter at UFC 330, so he's going to be there. He's cutting weight in preparation in case anything happens to Makhachev. But like, that's the other fight I didn't write. It's at the top. Carlos Prates and Michael Morales need to fucking fight.
Oh yeah, they need to.
They need to fight.
It has to be like that. That's gonna be the biggest fireworks of the year. That's July 4th fireworks right there. If those guys go at it.
Yeah.
In the same kind of boat as that too. I think I saw that Carlos Prates just wants to wait it out and doesn't even want to fight Morales. I read that. I got to like double check on that one, but I hope that's not true. If something happens to Islam, something happens to Garry, and Michael Morales steps in, I'm not going to lie, that's one of those guys that steps in where my excitement level stays. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like where it dips down. Like, when Money More kind of obviously stepped in, I was like, gosh darn it, this is going to be over in 2 seconds. It's one of those where he steps in, I'm like, okay, I'm actually like more excited here. You know what I mean? So, God, I hope and pray that he's at least has a quick enough turnaround where he can fight someone, or that Gary or Islam will do it.
Yeah.
I'm also with you on Gillian, by the way, too. I'm like really liking her for next week.
Yeah, I think so. And the other thing too, like as far as like fights that need to be booked, I'm not my guy. So my poster, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure Shavkat Rakhmonov is ever going to fight again.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so either.
Ever. Like it. What happened there? It was like quick bait that he's booked a fight against Carlos Prates or Michael Morales, and now it's quick bait that like he's never fighting again. Like he just like catastrophic injuries and stuff like that.
It's giving me like Connor kind of like that energy of, oh, he's coming back. Okay, no, he's not. You know what I mean? Like that type of mixed reports, obviously without the as big of a stardom. But I think that's the kind of energy I'm getting where it's there's a rumor that he's coming back and then he's not coming back. It's like, I don't have faith anymore. I don't have any faith anymore. It's going to be in here. Yeah. I don't think he's, you know, there's never been anything set in stone. They don't, UFC doesn't talk about him. He's not really in the rankings anymore. It's kind of, it's fallen in the background.
Yeah. You had brought that point up, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago that he's no longer in the rankings. And I was like, huh, he's not. That's not a good sign.
No.
That's not a good sign.
And when he does get a fight, if he does come back, it's people like you have to remind everyone who he is, you know, because it's been so long.
Yeah. What was because we didn't talk about it last week. What was your reaction to the UFC Paris main event and that the fact that the UFC signs they announced it during the Serbia card, I think, or maybe it was the week before the Parnassi that he's fighting, you know, the guy that fought on MVP. He's a consensus or one of the consensus best fighters not in the UFC. Now he's headlining the fight card against Dan Hooker at UFC Paris next month.
I think it's a good fighter for him to start off against in Dan Hooker, where it's a big enough name and the guy's got a good reputation. If you know, not if, but like when he wins, it's like, hey, that's a good win. You got a guy that's been around the block before, fought the best of the best, and he got a good estimate of who he is. Headlining right away is the part that I was just kind of shocked by, you know. And if I was any other fighter in the UFC, I'd be kind of pissed off and kind of feel really disrespected. The fact that you're bringing in a guy that's not even in this and that's really just coming off for hype and then put him on such a large stage and kind of give him his own card, if you will, that shocked me a little bit. I don't think he deserved right away to get a main event fight, even though it's not a numbered one. It's a fight night, but still. I don't like that part, Jordan. And again, I'd feel disrespected if I was the other fights on this card. Like, are you serious? Yeah. And especially it's France, Ciryl Gane, Tom Aspinall. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously, that's the fight we wanted to have. And I think also there might be a little bit of it, like, you know, part of the deal was that, you get to fight for the UFC and headline a card in your home soil with, you know, this whole MVP MMA creation, the merger between MVP, PFL, you know, the fact that maybe the UFC has to notice a little bit about what Jake Paul is doing in the space. This is one of their guys that could have been a big star for them, but the UFC comes in there and snatches them. You know, if they do the same with Usman Nurmagomedov, then you notice the UFC is kind of paying attention a little bit to what's going on over there.
Yeah.
And saying, you're never going to be us, but like, we're going to squash you immediately before you even become some sort of competition.
It's something to keep an eye out for, and obviously there's going to be more fighters too coming that are free agents, aka Khabib's cousin. That's all we got for you on the Unnamed MMA Podcast with Jordan Sherwood and myself, Mario Heron. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with UFC 330 official picks and breakdown. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.